Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, the short and stubby edition that we like to call minis.
Excuse me? Who are you calling short and stubby?
Well, no, neither one of us are tall guys.
That's fair. That's fair, Chuck.
We're average.
Yeah, okay. I'll take it.
I always wanted to be 6 feet.
I did, too.
What are you, like 5'8"?
I'm 5'11", is what I like to say.
Oh, are you really?
I don't know, man. Probably not.
What kind of a grown man doesn't know how tall he is?
This kind right here, my man.
I think we're about the same height, aren't we?
I think roughly, yeah.
Listen, Noel, it's not a contest.
Hey, I'm not treating it like a contest. I just genuinely don't know.
I used to be 5'10 solid, and now I'm just under, so I'm shrinking.
Oh, my goodness.
That happens.
That does happen. Shrinkage. Yeah. Adult shrinkage.
No comment.
All right, fair enough.
I want to thank some people right off the bat here. Because as I was explaining to Noel here, as we're plowing through these mini crushes, I was a bad boy and did not start keeping up with these and what I'm covering in them from the beginning, like what social studies questions I've asked, what I've recommended and recommended viewing or stream this. And you need to keep up with that stuff or you start you're in danger of repeating yourself. And I am so busy right now, I didn't have time to go through, scrub through all the shows and make a big list. So I reached out to Hurls, Jill Hurley, the wonderful Jill Hurley, who has been helping us keep track with the Stuff You Should Know episodes over the years. We call her our Minister of Information. What do we call her?
That sounds good. That's like something from like 1984.
I don't think
that's a little dystopian.
I might have just made that up. Is that what we call you, Jill? She'll remind me. But anyway, I said, hey, Jill, I know you're busy as well and that you have your own life to live. But if you could help me out here, I would really appreciate it. Shout out to the Movie Crushers page on Facebook. She went to the Movie Crushers, asked for volunteers to take one episode each and scrub through and list out what we've done. And Jill would compile that in a document for me and send it. And then I could keep up with it moving forward. So big, big thanks to Jill. Minister of Statistics? No. Information? Anyway, thanks, Jill. Thanks, Julie Perez. Thanks, Kelly Talley. Thanks to Sherry Oldenburg. Thanks to Adrian Crane twice. Thanks to Bessie Hicks a couple of times. She took two. Thanks to Carrie Bota, great name. Thanks to Rachel Humphreys. Thanks to Michelle Horowitz, Amy Ball, Deborah Schloman, great name. Christopher Austin, and Rob Dickinson. Everyone that I just named did me a real big solid. They are the superest of super fans. So big thanks to all you guys and ladies. Because it really helped me out. So, enough of that, Noel.
Let us reap the fruits of their labors.
That's right. We're going to move on with a social studies segment.
Social studies on Movie Crush.
And I was inspired by a question from the last episode, what movie character would you most wish to be? And I felt bad because I kind of forgot to put one up, and so the West Coast, I'm very sorry because, you know, 8:30 in the morning, we clearly only got people either on Australia or the East Coast of the United States. And Rachel Jones says West Coast of Australia is very happy. And she said she wanted to be Juliet Holm in Heavenly Creatures, Kate Winslet's character, and Rizzo from Grease. And then she said as she got older, Meg Ryan's character, and You've Got Mail. Good one, Rachel, or maybe Rochelle. Chris Rupp says Han Solo, fastest ship, best Wookiee friend, best pilot, scoundrel, legend.
I'm confused about his relationship with Chewbacca, though, I got to say.
Did you see the Solo movie?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I haven't seen it yet.
It kind of bored me. They meet in this fighting pit. I think that's known in the lore, but I don't understand how they hit it off. They literally get in this huge fight and then just instantly become friends. It's confusing to me.
That's a bit of a trope, though.
Mm-hmm. Is it? Yeah, I guess
the guys
that's
who
true.
Punch each other and yeah. They're like, "Hey, we're buds now."
Hey, here we are.
Yeah, I think I'm. I don't want to be disappointed by it, and I've heard it's disappointing.
I just didn't care.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll see it at some point, of course. Catherine Snow says, "Is it pronounced Hermione Granger from Harry Potter?"
Hermione, my man. Hermione.
She says she is a badass witch and Harry would be dead 1,000 times over without her. Nick Kelly says Malcolm Reynolds from Serenity. I just want to cruise around in space with a bunch of friends having misadventures. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Joe Brown says Jack Burton. I would love to go on an epic adventure in the magical San Francisco underground fighting the forces of evil with a 6-demon bag. That's a good one. He's talking about, of course, Big Trouble in Little China. Tyler Menke says, the dude from The Big Lebowski. Cool, smart, funny, dresses like a million bucks.
Is he being sarcastic there?
I don't know. Well, I guess to Tyler, the bathrobe is preferred wardrobe.
Yeah.
Brett Giles says, Jason McCullough, the character in Support Your Local Sheriff. I've never heard of that. Have you?
I have not, no.
All right, well, that's who Brett wants to be. Mike Pintola says, Charlie Sims from Scent of a Woman. John B. McCarty says, Willy Wonka, the Gene Wilder version, of course. Yeah, that's a good one. He said, why? Because he owns a freaking chocolate factory. Good
Fair.
Answer.
Yeah.
Lilius Bonecci, great name, says, Arwen is who comes to mind. One badass elf with skills. What is that? Is that from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, is that the one that, is that,
What's her name? From
is
Lost?
It Liv Tyler or is it the other one?
Oh, I don't know.
Liv Tyler. No, I think you know what? I think it is her. She's the character that was kind of invented for the movie.
Okay.
The Liv Tyler. The Lost Gal's character.
Yes, the Lost Gal.
I forget her damn name.
Ryan Lee says, the eponymous Sanjuro from Kurosawa's Sanjuro. He sleeps all the time but manages to be a strategic genius and a masterful swordsman. Jimmy Kuykendall says, the dude, another dude. Justin Shackleton says Charlie Chaplin's Little Tramp. Ashley Winker says Hiccup Haddock III from How to Train Your Dragon. All right. Good answer. Tim Melton says Cool Hand Luke. Oh, yeah. Good answer. Rachel Mahaffey says Amelie. I could live in that perfectly designed apartment.
She's just so delightful.
Yeah. Sounds like Emily wanting to live in just a different place other than her own home. Rick Broidus is Captain Kirk from Wrath of Khan. He's got a lot of swagger in that one. Randy Rodriguez, Neo from The Matrix. All right, fair enough. Greta Koenig says Cher and Moonstruck, with the character of Loretta. Interesting family, and I like the way her character changes the movie. Changes in the movie. Kyle Wilson, Emmett from The Lego Movie. Mayan Becker, Indiana Jones. That's what I said.
It is what you said, yeah.
Aaron Alt says Snake Plissken. Oh, yeah. Good answer. Although, man, he goes through it.
He does. He really does. He goes. They put him through his paces. We're talking about him in the first movie, too, I imagine, because people really universally hated the second one.
Yeah. That movie managed to look like it was made 30 years previous.
I know.
The effects were so bad.
There's like that surfing scene that looks like
my Lord.
It looks like something you do at an amusement park where you're like, get a VHS of you pretending to surf in front of a green screen, you know?
Exactly. Andrew Augustine says Gene Kelly. All right. Xavier Barton says Ferris Bueller. Sherry Oldenburg says Bridget Jones because London and Mark Darcy. I'm with you there. Katie Welpton Gross says Wonder Woman. Strength, smarts, and the power bracelets. Yeah, so Katie likes to accessorize.
What about the golden lasso of truth?
Yeah, that's true. Ben Master says Nick Charles from the Thin Man movies. Carrie Mason, another Wonder Woman. Desiree Held, Shuri from the Black Panther. Ooh, yes. Anything from Black Panther, I'm way supportive of. Great movie. Laura Giles says, Sherry Darling from Planet Terror. Oh, my God, a gun leg. Jonathan, ooh, boy, how do I pronounce this? Jonathan Zapansky, I'm going to say. But Jonathan starts his name off with four consonants. That takes a lot of guts.
Indeed.
Jonathan says James Bond. Shout out and look forward to a Bond special coming up soon with the great Matt Gourley.
That's right. Bond is so tortured, though, man. He just never seems happy.
Yeah.
He seems so bummed out and just beaten down by life. And it's like, this is all I can do is just kill or be killed.
That's true, especially the new Bond. Boy, you Bond fans are going to love that episode. It was so great. Gourley's knowledge is just ridiculous. Dylan Orr says Bruce Almighty. Patrick McGrath says Mongo. because he's just pawn in Game of Life. That's great from Blazing Saddles. Blake D. Morgan says, Atreyu on Neverending Story. Who doesn't want a giant flying dog? Good point.
Truth. Yeah. I named my car after that giant flying dog.
Are going to buzz through these last ones because I want everyone to be heard. Sally McKenzie, another Indiana Jones. Paul Stanfield, James Bond. Annabelle Sutton, Violet, Incredible. Who wouldn't want to be invisible and put up a force field? Robin Simotel, I'm probably not pronouncing that right. A customer in Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Mm.
I love that. Laura Lemke, Hermione Granger.
The Potter fans are going to shred you online.
The Potterists.
Exactly.
Stephen Phillips says Batman. Mike Dancy says Clark Kent. Wesley Hall says Rosie or any of the other hobbits that got to chill in the Shire while everything else went down. Janelle Thomas says, I would say Nora from Thin Man because she's so smart and tough and keeps right up with Nick. Erica Winter says Susan and Desperately Seeking Susan. All right, that's a good one. And finally, Kyle Peterson says, no contest, Indiana Jones, best job in the world, and the skills to back it up. All right.
Hey, man, yours came up a couple times.
Indiana Jones?
I think you were right.
Is that the right answer?
The right answer.
All right, moving on. Another edition of Trope Time coming your way. Still buzzing through these tropes. I have a feeling I bit off more than I could chew here. We're going to be doing this till I die. David Nugent, he is bugged by the is the character dead or not thing, but in that all you need to, like, you don't need to be a doctor is what he's saying to tell that someone's dead. All you need to do is feel for the carotid pulse for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
That's true. Or, is that, you're saying there's confusion
yeah,
as to whether, like, someone's dead?
Sure. Like, just check.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to be a doctor. Anyone can check to see if someone's dead.
That's true.
You know?
I got you.
I kind of agree with you there. Lee Lastavica, when a couple gets into a heated argument and then bam, instant makeout love scene. Oh, here's a trope that I'm going to throw your way, Noel, that really grosses me out is when the bloodied faces are kissing at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Every time I see that, I'm like, God, who would do that?
Well, they've just been through it together, Chuck, and they just...
So bear hug it out. Kiss that nasty, bloody face.
No, they really love each other, and they have to express it.
Ugh, that's always bugged me.
With their mouths.
Express their love with their mouths.
Oh, yeah, that's what kissing is, Chuck.
Dana Eliason says, more of an ODD movie trope. What does that even mean? Odd?
That's what's... Or is it an acronym that we're unaware of?
I think she means odd, but she capitalized it, so I thought it was some sort of condition.
So she's like, it's an odd movie trope.
Oh, boy, that was funny. The common use of super crazy decorated or souped-up taxis in the 80s. Yeah, for sure. Remember, like, every taxi in the 80s had, like, a carpeted dashboard and, like, tassels hanging from the roof.
That's true, but that's also a little bit of a racist trope because a lot of times it was poking fun at the fact that the driver was like Middle Eastern or something.
Right.
And it was all like,
and so he had to have
crazy tassels and like, you know, Persian carpets everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think
it was almost a little over the top kind of in that way. And then and then usually the character would be a little over the top caricature of that.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
No,
there.
I'm with you, man. I think you're totally right. Edmund Toralba says, one trope I dread is a supernatural threat. And you have the control room, you know, the military guy advocating to nuke him. Sure, the scientist knows how to defeat the threat, but the military guy just wants to bomb them. Yeah, I guess that's a trope. Chris Rupp says in sci-fi movies, when the older character meets their younger self, Looper is the most obvious recent example, but Frequency with Dennis Quaid. Sure, 12 Monkeys. Yeah, I don't know if that's a trope. Is it a trope?
Say it again.
When the older version of a character in a sci-fi movie meets the younger version of themselves.
Yeah, that's happened. That was in Looper.
Yeah.
That's certainly in Back to the Future. That's more of a, you know, it's a time travel trope more than anything, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. And it's one of those things where you're supposed to avoid that. Because if you meet your older self or your younger self, it could
I'll go bad.
Brain blow you up in your brain.
You know? Mm. All right, we're not here to poop on your tropes, people.
No, man. It's called Trope Time, not
Poop on tropes.
Yeah.
This is Catriona Pagni. Beautiful name. A character that appears to be a benevolent father figure, actually being evil, like David in the most recent Alien movie, or Dad in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yeah, that's a trope.
Yeah, or Hal in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
That's true.
I'm just saying. Yeah, these nurturing kind of helpful figures.
Helpful AIs.
Yeah, or whatever, that end up just manipulating you for their own evil ends.
Yeah, I'm with you. Aaron Karpman, throwing a rock at your pet or animal or alien friend to protect them and yelling,
"Get out of here! We don't want you anymore! Go! Go!" That one?
Oh, you got it, dude.
It's a good one.
It, literally, the next thing he typed was, "Go on, get out of here. I hate you." Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Totally a trope. Because that's the only way to do it, you know?
Yeah, if you love something, yell at it and make it go away.
David Priest, that was a great bit of acting, Noel, by the way.
Man.
It's good stuff. Dave Priest says, when someone hangs up on the other end of the phone and the person continuously clicks the button, like, oh. That never works.
Also, we've talked about this before, but when someone hangs up on you and immediately goes to the doo, that does not happen. That is not what happens.
Yeah, it's like screenwriters don't know how phones work, period,
right. Basically. And they only recently figured out how computers work, because for a long time, any depiction of computers or the internet in movies was just like, what is this?
So maybe they'll catch up to this technology one day. Gene Sharp says, the montage. Sure.
You got to have a montage.
Yeah. I love a good montage.
Montage.
Footloose. Great one.
Yeah. You learn to do something in a short period of time, like karate, dancing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, skiing, whatever.
All right. That's it for trope time. We're going to keep going through these until Noel and I are dead and gone. Mm-hmm. We're going to move on now, finally, Noel, to comment card. Your questions to us about movies. All right, here come five of them. Rebecca Rube. Rebecca's all over this page. I appreciate the support, Rebecca. She says, favorite drinks to have per genre? In other words, like beer for comedy, whiskey for drama? Well, I don't do that.
I just drink whiskey all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Is that your jam?
That's my drink, yeah.
What's your fave lately?
I just do Jameson.
Oh, Irish?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just what I do. I like a fancy one. I had a really good Japanese one a couple of weeks ago. Mm. It was the Suntory. It was Suntory time.
Yeah. Japanese whiskey's
it
good
was quite
stuff.
Good. It was kind of clear.
Uh-huh.
Had a good flavor, good finish.
So what are you, over ice?
Yeah, over ice.
A couple of fingers worth?
Yeah. However many fingers the bartender gives me.
But do you have that at home, too?
I usually drink out.
Oh, okay. So you don't drink at home?
I do sometimes, but I like to go out with friends and do karaoke and, you know, have drinks.
You're going to karaoke?
I always do karaoke.
Have you ever been to live karaoke here in Atlanta?
With the band, you mean? Like the Meddlesome Karaoke thing?
Yeah,
I have been. It was too much of a shit show. We couldn't get on the stage, but...
Yeah, you got to go early and get your name in there. But I went for my birthday a couple of years ago, and we had a blast.
Oh, it looked like a good time. For people that don't know what we're talking about, there's a place where they have a live band that plays the backup of music of whatever karaoke song you want to do, and you get to, you know, be a rock star kind of.
Yeah, and it's kind of great because I think the quality of singer is usually a bit higher.
Yes.
Because you're more reluctant to go up there unless you probably think you can pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that have, like, you can see it on the faces of a lot of these people that are like, I've never been in a band, and this is how I get to live it out.
Exactly.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
And in Atlanta, one of the local DJs, English Nick, he serves as the emergency sort of backup guy.
Huh.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, English Nick hosts it. He stands kind of off to the side with a mic and will sing backup, and then if it turns out that you suck, they will kind of turn you down a bit and turn him up a bit.
Nice.
Because
just to keep it moving.
Yeah, because with a live band, if you're like a really shitty singer,
yeah,
I mean, bad karaoke is hard to sit through anyway, But with a live band, it really kind of ruins the whole experience.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's very cool.
Yeah. When I waddled up there to do Surrender by Cheap Trick, I think I remember him looking at me like, oh, here I go. Mm-hmm. And he got ready, and I, of course, killed it.
Oh, yeah.
And he was afterward was like, hey, great job, man. That was really great.
He's English. He's English Nick.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Cool.
And there was this country boy who clearly drives in every week from the boonies in Georgia who got up there with his cowboy hat and destroyed Wanted Dead or Alive.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my – that's a go-to for me, actually.
Yeah, and he was just – he had an amazing voice. He's one of these guys that like
– Well, he was a cowboy.
Sings on his tractor.
Yeah, he rides on his steel horse that he rides on.
All right. Sorry for that sidetrack. Mike Sams, what movie do you consider bad or mediocre, but if you recast the leads, it would actually be good?
Such a specific question.
I know. I can't think of a lot of movies that were only bad because of the actor that they cast. Usually, if it's a bad actor, it's a bad movie to begin with for me. You know? Can you think of one?
Not really.
Sorry, Mike. It's a disappointing answer, but I stand by it.
As do I. I stand by you, Chuck.
Jane Savage says, is there a movie out there which you thought had a great premise but was poorly executed? Yeah, you know what? The first one that comes to mind is Castaway with Tom Hanks.
Not a fan, huh? Not a fan of the beach ball.
Well,
it was a volleyball.
Volleyball. I think that movie, if... It could have been a very intense piece of art mm-hmm. if you had cut out all of the beginning and the ending mm-hmm. stuff mm-hmm. and literally started that movie on the plane when it goes down.
Oh, cool.
And spent an hour and a half with this guy on an island. Maybe take out the volleyball stuff.
Yeah. I'm almost picturing, too, the beginning part. Is it sort of like his family life and stuff for a minute?
Yeah, it's all that set up.
Steve is a mild-mannered American man, uh-huh. blah, blah, blah. And then one day.
Yeah. Pretty much. It has just this big over-the-top sort of setup. And then when he goes back home at the end, like, get rid of all that stuff and just make it about a guy on an island.
Yeah.
And maybe you can flash back to some of the home life, which I think they did in the movie. Yeah. That's okay.
I'm a big fan of not beating people over the head with exposition. Like, just drop me into the situation and then let's see where it goes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Because you know what, Chuck? I've actually never seen Castaway. So this is all speculation on my part.
Yeah. It was a movie I wanted to be so much better because it had the bones of, like, what could have been a really cool piece of art.
Interesting.
And ended up being kind of Hollywood-y. How many is that? Three? A couple more here. Jessica Parsons. Do you ever watch the director's or actor's commentary? Yeah, you know what, Jessica? I used to in the old DVD days, but I have noticed, I think on some of these movies on Apple, when you rent them through Apple now, some of them I've noticed have a little tag for like extra content. And I haven't clicked on that yet because honestly, Jessica, I don't have a lot of time anymore to do that because that means essentially watching the movie more than once. But man, in my younger days, I used to do that. I used to love the director's commentary. Mm-hmm. A lot of insight.
Yeah, it's true. And it's weird because I think we were talking earlier or on another episode about moving away from owning DVDs.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you can get that stuff packaged digitally, but it doesn't feel the same. I don't know why. Yeah. Agreed. I rented Hunger Games with my kid the other day, and there was like a version of it with bonus material, but it's obviously just lobbed onto the end of the file. That interactive menu on the DVD is kind of what made it feel cool.
Yeah.
Because you could, like, watch it in
just
your own
hitting that
time.
Button.
Hitting that, you want to hit that button, Chuck.
Yeah, Jessica. I wish I could indulge that still because I used to love it. It was a lot of times it was like little bits of a film class, which is kind of nice. Then finally, Brenda Allgood says, what is the oldest movie, oldest made movie that you haven't seen but would like to? Well, I mean, I've talked before about not having seen Casablanca. That certainly is one of the big older movies on my list. And we talked in a couple of episodes ago, I think the one that was just released this week, how you and I have large gaps in our older movie viewing experience.
Did you see that crazy thread that someone started? Is that what you're talking about on the Facebook page? About
Which one?
Classic movies that we should see?
Oh, no.
Yeah, there's a whole thread on the Movie Crushers where people are just listing movies that we should see.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, and not the little-known movie one, is it?
No, this is literally classic movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And also, just as a reminder, everyone, I put out the call for little-known movies, which is essentially just a great recommendation thread now. And there are like close to 500 recommendations going on.
That's so cool that the group is so so active. It's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. So shout out to not only the Movie Crush page, but the Movie Crushers, the subpage of Big Time Movie Nerds. And I say that with love. All right, that's it for this week, everyone. Thank you for your support on the social medias. You can find us at Movie Crush Pod for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And so your homework this week is Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. I had Boots Riley in here. The great Boots Riley, who is probably best known as the leader of the hip-hop group The Coup for many years.
Such a cool group.
Yeah. I mean, should I call them the underground hip-hop group?
Yeah, they kind of were. I don't think they ever quite were like MTV famous, but I heard about them through friends, like word of mouth, like back in the late 90s, early aughts kind of. And they were super political and
yeah.
Really, really crafty lyrics and very, very clever stuff.
Yeah, well,
really,
Boots really has a long history of activism in his life. Grew up in Oakland, and he has he has written and directed a movie. And he's my age, in his middle to late 40s, his very first film, which is just blew me away that at this stage in his life, he was like, you know, I think I want to write and direct a movie. And he did so. And it's called Sorry to Bother You. And it's called Sorry to Bother You, coming very soon to theaters, starring a bunch of great people, including the wonderful Lakeith Stanfield and Armie Hammer and Tessa Thompson, Steven Yeun, Terry Crews. Really great movie. I went to a sneak preview of it.
Oh, nice. I'm jealous. It really,
totally
it's
original.
So up my alley. It looks a lot like it's got that kind of surreal, kind of like psychedelic vibe to it in the trailers almost.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of
Michel
Terry
Gondry?
Gilliam or Michel Gondry. Exactly. Yes, exactly. No, totally. Yeah.
It absolutely has a Michel Gondry vibe. But Boots is just a cool guy, and it was set up through a PR firm, but he came in here and I feel like we bonded a bit. And we talked about a very interesting film, like I said, Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. Just check that movie out. It is one of the most interesting films I've ever seen and how it was executed.
Yeah, it's good.
Hard to describe, but a really, really cool, cool movie. You got anything else, Noel?
I got nothing else except that I'm excited about the movie you're talking about.
Sorry to Bother You.
Sorry to Bother You. Also, Meryl Garbus from Toon Yards does a lot of the music, and she's one of my favorites, along with The Coup.
Do you like Toon Yards?
I do like Toon Yards, yeah.
Awesome. All right, so thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we'll see you next week for another Mini Crush.